Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, 5 minutes after 9 o'clock, we move from one wonderful human to another. Thank you so much, Dr. Sheldon Roshalil. Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, now that you're here, you know.
The weekend is upon us.
We've now fully entered the weekend. How are you?
I'm great, and you?
What are we discussing today?
So, I thought it would be cool to talk about, it is a bit macabre, but the 27 Club.
Eish.
Yeah.
Eish.
And so, it is this dubious club that very iconic people belong to, usually people from the arts world. And it all started with this guy called Robert Johnson. He was a very famous blues musician.
Yes.
And the story goes that he was really an awful guitar player. And he was told by friends that he needed to go down the crossroad from where he lived. And he would meet someone there, and they would grant him his wish. Anyway, he got to the crossroad, and he met the devil at the crossroad, and they negotiated a deal. So he had his guitar with him. The devil played some music on the guitar, and then he said, "What do you want?"
Gave him his powers.
And then he said, "I want to be the best guitar player in the whole world." And he came back, and he was this phenomenal guitarist. So I guess the legend...
But there was a trade-off, right?
Yeah. He had to sell his soul to the devil.
Yes.
But the trade-off was that he was going to become this
great guitarist.
Because the whole big thing was that he was so awful.
Yes.
and people couldn't explain how he got so good.
Overnight.
Yeah. And so this was the only logical conclusion, that this guy was sold to the devil to become such a brilliant guitarist.
And then he has to die.
And then he dies. So the story behind his death was that he was performing at a juke joint.
Mm-hmm.
And he was flirting with this married woman, and the husband found out about it, and he was not happy.
Mm.
And she gave him a bottle of whiskey, and that bottle of whiskey was poisoned. And so when he drank it, he was poisoned, and it took him about 2 days to die. So he was in immense pain, and then 2 days later died at the age of 27. And that's basically where the legend of the 27 Club comes.
These are amazing people who die at 27.
Yeah, they've got a rising star, and as they
peak,
they out. And the interesting thing is that Robert Johnson died on the 16th of August, 1938.
Yeah.
And two other iconic people also died.
We are deep in conspiracy theory mode here, so allow us, please.
Yes, I love a good conspiracy. Although it means nothing, it's just cool. So two other very iconic people died on the 16th of August. Bobby DeBarge from the band DeBarge died on the 16th of August, 1995. And Elvis Presley died on the 16th of August, 1977. So three iconic people. The other two are not 27. He's the only 27 Club member. But and then in the story was reinforced when in the late 1970s, three very iconic musicians of the time all passed away within months of each other, and all of them were 27. So it was Janis Joplin. So it was a period of 10 months. Janis Joplin was 27, Jim Morrison was 27, and Jimi Hendrix was 27.
And then there goes the theory.
Yeah, so then people were like, it's a real thing. If you're going to be famous, you're going to die at 27. It's either going to be drugs, it's going to be an airplane's going to take you out, or it's going to be your age, 27. And then Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones also died at the age of 27 in 1969. And then Jean-Michel Basquiat, the famous street artist, I love Basquiat.
Yes.
He passed away in the 1980s at the age of 27. And then Kurt Cobain shot himself in the 1990s at the age of 27. So the thing with all of these people and the way they pass away and the big linking thing, other than the age of being 27, it's usually some mysterious death. So it's like either either it's some drug thing or some suicide thing, or it's just, it's not like a normal, like they had a heart attack and they passed away.
No musician dies normally. What are you talking about?
No, no, no. Fast lives.
So, no great musician passes normally.
No. You live fast, you die fast. So I think the first person on our list, let me just have a look at who our first person is. Yes. So this artist, it was in the early 2000s, she was one of my favorite artists.
Gorgeous.
And
gorgeous.
She was, besides for being exceptionally beautiful, she had this angelic voice. Mm. And she was like, she married the concepts of R&B and South Africanness. So she's one of the South African 27 Club members. Mm. But she was able to marry
the... I didn't know she was 27 when she died.
Yeah, she was 27. And so TK. And she was this phenomenal vocalist. And she was highly criticized at the time because it was the Kwaito era. And everyone was like, you should be doing Kwaito. Mm. What is this like beautiful ballady R&B thing? And actually she got a contract to go to the UK to launch her career there. And she was blocked by a South African record company. Mm. And so that was stifled. And so she wasn't able to launch her international career, but people were interested in her.
Yeah.
And that's part of the 27 Club story is that these people are on the rise and then they get cut. So she got three consecutive SAMA Awards for Best R&B Album. Mm. Her third album was called Black Butterfly in 2003, and the song that we've selected is Black Butterfly. And it was produced by Alexis Faku. The story behind her passing is quite mysterious, and no one knows to
what
this
happened
day.
Yeah, there.
There's still a lot of like suspiciousness about what the story behind her passing was. But essentially, what happened was this hotel has now become a tourist attraction.
Is it really?
Yes, the
I'm
City
so
Lodge.
Scared when I pass there all the time.
Yes, so
I cannot remove the story from the hotel.
Exactly.
Because I just think it's so eerie.
Yeah, so it has become a bit of like an attraction, but we've got a few in Joburg. Also the haunted hospital in Kempton Park. I don't know if you've ever driven
past there. Yes, I know. I have actually been there.
Yeah. Okay.
In the hallways. Yes, I have.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I have.
So that, and then also the abandoned shopping mall in Pretoria, which is this weird mall that never got completed and just stands there. Like,
really?
Yes.
I don't know that one, but I've actually worked at that hospital.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Before it was abandoned?
No, while it was haunted.
Oh, my goodness.
It was very interesting.
So we've got these weird macabre things. But anyway, so at that hotel, she was staying over at the hotel the night before. She was entertaining friends. Mendoza was there, and the party just went on all night long. The next morning, her manager calls her at 10 o'clock, and they have a conversation. At 11 o'clock, her friend pops in and is like, oh, let's go for lunch. And she's like, no, I'm not feeling up to it. I'm going to go and have a bath. And then at 1:30, she's gone. And that was the end of the story. And so people think it was a drug-induced overdose, or could have been a suicide, could have been just an overdose. No one really knows what the true Hollywood story is in that instance. Mm-hmm. But we lost one of our most iconic artists at that time.
And the question is, who was in the hotel room?
Exactly.
Nobody wants to say.
No. And so, but this is an age-old story here in South Africa. No one knows. And so, yes, Black Butterfly. I love the song. It's so beautiful.
All right, we're back with our music.
Yeah.
The 27 Club is our theme for tonight.
Exactly. And, what I forgot to say about TK is that she's the niece of Yvonne Chaka Chaka.
Yeah.
And she also comes from a Vatsonga tribe. So she was of royal lineage.
Mm.
And that song is just such a... When I heard it for the first time in 2003, I was just like, this song is genius.
This is it.
Exactly. So the next tragic figure, I mean, we were talking off air about this, but I think the big thing with celebrity is that I think most artists are not ready for what is going to come. I mean, I think most people never think that they're going to reach that level of celebrity.
Yeah.
They're not going to be...
It can be overwhelming.
Exactly. I think it's a lot to be go. I think it's a lot to go from being an anonymous human being who can go to the shopping mall and pick up some groceries and then move on with the rest of their lives to someone where everyone's monitoring everything you do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's a lot. And I think it's, if you're not groomed for it, if you're not like prepared for it, it's a lot to take in at any given time. And I think, unfortunately, that was the case with our next person. Amy Winehouse.
What a talent.
Was this phenomenal British singer, but I don't think anyone ever expected that she was going to reach the heights that she eventually did. She released her first album, and no one was really interested in what that first album was all about. And then she released her second album, and it was produced by this guy called Mark Ronson, and I love Mark Ronson. He's a phenomenal producer. He produced the album, and it just blew up. It just was like the biggest thing ever, this Back in Black album. It won 5 Grammy Awards. She became the British female artist to win the most Grammy Awards in one night. That was until Adele. But that album won 5 Grammy Awards. Already there were signs that there were problems when she accepted these 5 Grammy Awards, because she wasn't able to get to the US to accept the awards because her visa wasn't passed because of certain conditions in her life at the time. So she performed at the Grammys, but via satellite.
Oh, Lord.
In the UK. And no one could have ever expected this. But I think there's a movie that's just come out about her, and there's been a few documentaries as well.
Yes.
I think she was sold down the river by her family, by the music industry. I think there's a lot of people to blame. There's so many sad videos, you know, where she's so drunk and she can barely get through the lyrics. And people just kept on pushing her onto the stage and go, all right, girl, you've got to do this thing. You've got to earn the bucks. Because there were all these people reliant on that machine that was making that money. And that was one person, Amy Winehouse. And It's a very sad story, and it's probably one of the saddest stories in the music industry. She eventually did not pass away from drugs, but from alcohol.
I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. So she drank herself into a stupor.
Alcohol poisoning.
Yeah. Alcohol poisoning. She was 5 times over the legal limit when she passed away, and it was also a similar situation to the TK story where she was in her apartment. She'd been drinking heavily. Her doctor had come through and had seen her, and he'd left and said, "No, there's nothing wrong with her," and then her bodyguard is who eventually found her. And he said that she had been struggling the few days before. So there was definitely a problem. But the industry, the people surrounding her, all these sycophants were just basically telling her what she wanted to hear. And I think that's what happens when you at that level is like you're making so much money. You've got so much influence. You're employing so many people that they don't want to take you out. Because we all know,
they rely so much on that money.
Exactly. And in the entertainment industry, the only time you're making money is if you're there.
Yeah.
If you're not there,
there's no money coming in.
Exactly, which means all those people out of work. And so the doctors are going to say, which is what happened with Michael Jackson, "You're fine. Go ahead.
And they
do your
keep
thing."
Giving him drugs to just keep going.
I mean, with Michael, they were giving him drugs to fall asleep and then giving him drugs to wake up.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very sad situation. And with the same thing with Amy Winehouse. And her father was integrally involved in this whole very sad debacle. But anyway, the song that I chose is a song called Tears Dry on Their Own, which was in the recent movie as well, the one about Amy Winehouse. And the interesting thing about this song, so it was released in 2007. It's from the Back in Black album, but it's got a sample of Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell song called "Ain't No Mountain High Enough." So there's a sample of that song in there, and it's just, if you listen to the lyrics and you consider the context, you get a different meaning to the song.
Amy Winehouse.
Oh, geez. And that voice. I mean, that voice would have been a national treasure. If she had carried on, it would have been the biggest thing. The sad thing is, her bodyguard said one of the last things that she said to him was that she would give it all back so she could just walk into a grocery store and just and be able to be free to walk around.
Yeah.
And I think that's the... That's the indictment of the whole thing, is that you're not ready for that. People say they want to be famous. They don't realize what that actually means.
Mm-hmm.
So our next one is so in the 1990s, there was this avalanche of all-girl groups. And especially in the R&B world, we had the Spice Girls, we had Destiny's Child, we had SWV, En Vogue, All Saints, Eternal,
yes.
TLC, Escape, Brownstone, 3LW, Atomic Kitten, or as some people used to call them, Automatic Kitten, and Salt and Pepper. Like, all of these girl bands just dominated the music scene in the 1990s, with the Spice Girls being at the top of the heap. But anyway, there was another band. They were called 702, not to be confused with something else.
Yes.
So they were a trio, just like Destiny's Child. But actually, Destiny's Child started as a four-girl group. But this was a trio, three girls. Two of the girls were sisters, Irish and Orish. And Orish was her talent was identified at a very young age. The girl group, so when they got signed for the first time, she was about 19 years old when they were signed. They released only three albums, similar to TK, who also only released three albums. Amy Winehouse only released two albums. And they became really famous. I mean, they weren't Spice Girls famous, but they were quite famous. The track that we're going to play was actually produced by Missy Elliott. Anyway, the girls did very well, but by 2005, the band was starting to fizzle out, and the girls had decided that they were going to do all different things. Mm. They were going to go and follow separate careers, and all of them unrelated to music. So the one became an accountant, the other one was managing a lodge. Orish, however, did continue singing, but not for very much longer, because by 2008, she had died of automotive hepatitis.
Mm-hmm.
And some articles say it was kidney failure. And she passed away mysteriously at the age of 27, just like the rest of the people that we've been looking at today. And also another sad story, like someone who's reaching the pinnacle of her success. Could it have been some addiction to alcohol or drug abuse or alcohol abuse? No one knows. Just know that this poor woman at the age of 27 passed away.
Sure.
So the song that we've selected is a song called Where My Girl's At.
Yes.
And it was a really big song back then, but it was catering to a very niche audience. But anyway, I remember when this song came out, and I just thought it was a banger.
So, very different vibe there.
Yes, some reggae. And I did that very intentionally.
Yes.
Because you and Leroy were talking about Bad Boys last week. And then I was like, I'm not going to be left out. So I'm going to jump on this bandwagon. And yes, they are going to include me whether they are
whether Leroy, we like it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm just taking... I'm taking what I want at this point.
So, well, you're welcome. Thank you for that.
So this band, Inner Circle, was started in 1968. And it's really weird because people only really heard about them in the mainstream of popular consciousness in like the late 1980s and the early 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
With a la 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 long.
Yes.
A la 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 long la long la long. Mm-hmm. Long. Anyway, which is quite a rude song, actually.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Anyway, so but anyway, so this Bad Boys song, it had a bit of a weird history because when it was originally released in 1987, it just didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And then they re-released the song in 1990 and was part of this television series in the US called Cops. And it still didn't do anything. And then they released A La 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 Long. And the song did very well for them. And then they thought, oh, because originally it was Bad Boys with A La 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 Long as the B-side.
Mm-hmm.
And then they released A La 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 Long.
Mm-hmm.
And then that became a big hit. And they were like, let's try and release Bad Boys again. And then, only then, did the song become big? And then it was used in the movie, the franchise movie for the Will Smith movie with, who was the actor, the other one?
Will Smith Martin Lawrence.
Yeah. So, and then it became this big hit, and it's now, but the band had already been together since 1968. So it was, so they were quite an established band. Mm. But one of their first vocalists, he actually joined them in the second album, and he was with them between 1974 and 1980,
yeah.
was this guy called Jacob Miller. And he was this iconic reggae artist in Jamaica, and he was discovered by this guy called Coxon Dodd. And Coxon Dodd was this producer who came from quite a wealthy family. They owned these clubs in Jamaica called the Downbeat Sound System. And by the late 1960s, he was going to the U.S. and buying Motown records and bringing them back to Jamaica, and he was like remixing them and slowing the beats down, and he basically came up with a formula for what would eventually become reggae as we know it today.
Yeah.
But by the late 1960s, that sort of, that Motown sound had fizzled out, and Motown had moved into like a more of like a psychedelic rock kind of thing. And so the ship had sailed, and Coxon Dodd didn't know what to do. So what he did was he started his own recording studio called Studio One. And Studio One became like the Abbey Road of Jamaica. Yeah. And there he discovered Bob Marley, and this Jacob Miller was part of that whole crew. He was about 13 years old when they discovered him. He would hustle in the studio all the time, was very inquisitive. He wanted to know what was going on. And so Coxon Dodd discovered Jacob Miller, and he became this well-known artist in Jamaica, and then he joined Inner Circle, and he became part of the crew. And actually, he became very good friends with Bob Marley. The two of them became very good friends, and just before he passed away, he went to Brazil with Chris Blackwell and Bob Marley to launch Island Records in Brazil. So Chris Blackwell was this British guy who lived in Jamaica, and he started this record company called Island Records. And the idea of Island Records was to spread the gospel of reggae music around the world. And so they decided to open up a branch in Brazil, and Bob Marley and Jacob Miller went to Brazil to launch Island Records, and they came back to Jamaica. And on Hope Road, which is so ironic, Jacob Miller was driving with his son, and they die in a car accident.
Yo.
And so Yo. Ironically, a year later, Bob Marley passes away from Yo. Cancer. So this incidental thing where, like, the, you know, the synergy of the world and the universe and all these weird things going on. And so the two guys, these two iconic reggae artists, pass away within a period of time from each other. And so that is the story behind Jacob Miller. Who
so
was,
many layers to that story. I mean, it's let's take a quick break. We'll be back after this. All right, so we continue on our... The stories are like quite something.
They are quite something. And there's just so many links, like, for example...
27 Club, it's really interesting.
Well, I mean, with Robert Johnson and Elvis Presley and DeBarge and now Bob Marley and Miller. And now another, back to South Africa, and we've got another South African situation here.
Can I tell you how I did not know he passed away at 20... Like, no sense.
I know.
No sense that he was 27.
Exactly. And he was also this rising star in the midst of COVID, and which is another... Like, I mean, come on. Actually, someone was reflecting on COVID. We're going to be able to reflect one day on the fact that... I remember when they locked down the whole country.
Yes.
That day, I was so petrified because I was like, the army...
is going to come out.
On the street corner there.
What we saw in China... people thought was going to happen here.
I was like, the army, Cyril Ramaphosa, has sent out the army. If I even dare stay,
peek, with your, you know, remember how people were afraid to even walk by themselves, or jog by themselves,
And so, like, we're going to be able to retell this story one day that We were not allowed to go outside. We couldn't even put our foot in the garden. Never mind go out onto the street.
You were not allowed to buy underwear. You remember that?
It was insane. The ridiculous...
Do you remember that we were not allowed to buy underwear?
I was like, I got to a point where I was like, I'm going to walk to the street, and if the army is there, they must arrest me.
Those were the most ridiculous things. I do remember. I think we were not allowed to buy underwear and what? Like socks or something. I don't know, but there was a list.
And you weren't allowed to smoke cigarettes. I mean, not that I smoke, but I was like, you couldn't smoke a cigarette. What the heck is going on?
You know what was really funny? Like, the thing about not buying cigarettes.
Yeah.
I mean, even the most honorable people I knew were doing underground stuff.
People were brewing their own beers.
They knew dodgy people suddenly buying.
There was a black market in alcohol.
I mean, I'm telling
you. And cigarettes.
The most honorable people I knew knew and were buying at the most dodgiest of places.
They had suppliers.
Just to get a cigarette.
It was just.
And I think the cigarette was 3 times the price.
It was just the craziest, most insane period of time. And actually, someone was recounting a story about how he was driving down the road and there was no one on the road.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, the day that they locked down South Africa, I was in Soweto.
Yeah.
And I'd been to a Yvonne Chaka Chaka function there.
Yes.
And I was driving home and I was like, Party Central. People are out drinking. They were partying hard. I was like...
I also remember going... I don't remember where it was. Where, you know how the suburbs had gone very quiet?
Yes.
And I think I went to like a Davidson or something. And nobody was wearing a mask. And everybody was out.
Exactly.
Life was normal. And I was like... I mean, we live in such different worlds.
Exactly.
And
try that in a suburb.
No one cared. No, nobody cared.
But in the suburbs, people were being mean. Like, yes. Are you standing 2 meters near me?
And if you are wearing a mask in the township, ne? Like, everybody's looking at you weird. It's like, oh, so you think you're better now?
Yeah, exactly. I remember someone reprimanding me at the spa.
Take off that mask.
Because I was wearing a mask. Because I wasn't wearing a mask. This lady told the manager to come and tell me that I needed to put my mask on in the spa. I was like, what? This is why she got a Woolworths. Anyway.
And then there were those people who used to shame you for wearing a mask in the, you know, the anti-vaxxers.
Yes. So you could not win. At that time, you could not win because someone was going to be upset with you for some reason.
That's funny.
But anyway, so Costa Titch, who's the guy who we're talking about now, he rose up in the midst of this. So actually, like, it's a bit of a difficult one because, like, he became famous at that time. And then by the time it was over, he was gone.
Yeah.
And incidentally as well, another weird coincidence, he died in March and AKA died in February. So they died a month apart from each other.
Yeah.
And so, and his story is actually such a sad story because he was performing live on stage and he had an attack and he collapsed on stage, recovered, stood up, carried on performing.
And collapsed again.
Collapsed again. And that was it. That was it. And he was gone. He only released 3 albums. Like 702 and yeah, like all yeah. of these people, only 3 albums. Also, talent was identified very young, came from a Greek dad and a South African mom from up north in South Africa and became this like adored artist. I mean, he collaborated with quite a few people, iconic people before he passed away. And then just disappeared. Mm. And that was the end of the Costa Titch story. Mm. And so the song that we're going to play is a song originally performed by Mandoza. And this is a cover version of it, a remixed version of it. And he made it really big again. And yeah, Mandoza is no longer here. Mm. TK is no longer here. Mm. AKA is no longer here. And Bob Marley no longer here.
Wow.
I mean, these guys, and they were all linked to each other, all these people.
I really appreciate you coming through today. It was lovely.
Thank you.
This is how we end our weekend, and thanks, guys. We'll be back on Monday at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.